Yes, and welcome, welcome, welcome once again to another podcast episode and show of the TJ Macklin Show. I am your host, as always, TJ Macklin, back with another week over at Place to Be Nation. Hope you enjoyed last week's guest. You know, we had a good time talking about just various topics. You know, Jay and I, as you know, he tweeted out, it was very free-flowing and very pinged back off the wall with a lot of topics. But this week, Matt Gacta, I just horribly mispronounced his last name. Anyway, Matt, find him over at DK on Sports, the website that Dejan has been running for probably about over a year or so. I think he's been running his website, PaySite. So it's one of those ones where it's worth the content to pay for the monthly subscription as well, where, as we describe later on at the end of the show, the lunatic level that locks you in for, I believe, 3 years at a one set rate. I mean, I can't find a better deal than that than to, to sign up and have some very informed columnists and very informed writers give you, not a hidden agenda or not one, axe to grind. I guess is a cliche you can use for what some people would, describe some of the writings for newspapers or for, the actual print media in a specific city. You know, if they have one narrative they want to keep on harping on and keep on working, no matter what's said in the locker room or what actually is on the field or ice or court or whatever, that person's going to continue to use that one narrative to beat down their point and their topic and whatever motive they want to go with. So that website, DK on Sports, very good, worth the time. I even make note that my dad has it on his iPad. I saw the app on when they came to visit here in Austin a couple weeks ago. So when you get a chance afterwards, after listening here and after going on Place to Be Nation, go on their site, put down the level of your military. I believe they have a great deal for you college students. I'm not sure if they still have their deal for the college year coming up, but I know they're working that angle as well. Anyway, back to the subject here for this week. Matt and I, we're both Pittsburgh guys. Well, I think Matt grew up in Michigan or Virginia or West Virginia, or whatever, but he now covers Matt Stats over on DK's website. So we spent 30 minutes talking about the wild card game coming up with the Pirates and Cubs. If you aren't a fan of those two teams or baseball, I do apologize, but this week it was the topic I wanted to talk about, especially because of how big this game is and how big the outcome could be for these two teams. Whichever one goes on to win, they have a really good chance at going for a World Series. Pirates be the first World Series since 1979, the Cubs since 1909. So they're two loaded teams. They're two teams that you wish that they had at least a three-game playoff instead of a one-game short sample size, winner take all, winner go home, and any other cliche that you can think of in this one scenario. So Matt and I, we talked a lot about this and a little bit about the Penguins' upcoming season and a little bit about what would make your eyes roll whenever you want to be a level-headed sports fan as compared to the knee-jerkers and the people that could see one terrible game from McCutcheon and want him gone from the team at the end of the season, or Melanson or Tony Watson or any of the other Pirates that have been very good over 162 game sample size. One game shouldn't determine what the tide will be turned to after the season. Okay, that's enough out of me. I'll let Matt pick up from here. So we have him coming up here after the break. On the show this week, I did his podcast or radio show over on Blog Talk Radio, to which I'm not sure if he continuously still does with Larry Snyder, Gospel of Hockey, I believe it was called from there. But now our guest this week, big sports writer over in Pittsburgh, Matt Gacta, which is, we just talked off air how to pronounce his last name. I'm pretty sure I did it correctly. If I didn't, he'll probably tell me in a second, and I will not be surprised. But back to what I was saying in my intro, now star from the small time, now a big time writer with DK on Sports, the leading Pittsburgh sport website over in the 412. That was very douchey of me by calling it the 412. So let me start off by saying, Matt, the numbers guy, Matt Stats. I'm going to roll over like a dog on my back, pet my belly and tell me how the Pirates can win on Wednesday night against Arrieta and the Cubs.
Well, I don't know if I can tell you exactly how they're going to win, but appreciate you having me on the show. You got the last name correct.
It's yes.
Big time I am, but...
well, Dejan, it's...
As always accepted.
Well, Dejan's doing it over in Pittsburgh with DK on Sports, the premium pay site. I mean, you guys are... Every 5 seconds, I see something going on, whether it's a new article coming up that... From Josh with breaking down the Penguins, or yourself with your stats, or you know DK with his overall columns on the Pirates realm. So you guys are killing it over there.
Well, I'm not going to dispute that at all, and I appreciate the compliment. I'm just trying to keep up, I guess.
So the stats here, I said beforehand, before getting off track, which I'm sure I'll do many other times in the half hour we spend together. Okay, Arrieta, Cubs, Wednesday. What do we expect here? Another Bumgarner destruction piece where it's over by the third inning, or maybe a little Cueto where there's a little hope?
Well, when you look back at last year's wild card game, the reason it was over by the third inning is because Edinson Volquez gave up a grand slam.
That's true.
It wasn't necessarily the case that you know Bumgarner beat them himself. He still needed the offense, and I think that ties in, TJ, to what the Pirates absolutely need to do, which is to keep it close, keep it within one run, or even carry a one-run lead into the sixth, into the seventh, and give Joe Maddon a dilemma to deal with. And we saw it with Jay Happ against the Cardinals. This past Monday, he was cruising along, but the Pirates needed a run. They needed to get a hit in a runner in scoring position situation. So Clint Hurdle went to a pinch hitter. So this is National League ball, and that's one thing that does come into play. And I think if the Pirates could have kept it at 0-0 in the sixth or seventh last year in the wild card game, maybe Bumgarner doesn't go the distance, and maybe things are different. So I guess that'd be objective number one for the Pirates Wednesday night. Another thing, though, is that the Pirates have seen plenty of Jake Arrieta this season. I believe they've had five looks at him, five different starts that he's made against the Pirates, and he's been with the Cubs for the last 2.5 years since he was traded from the Orioles. So they know what's coming, I guess, in a certain sense, but it doesn't necessarily make it any easier to hit. And the one advantage they might have is they've known for a while that it's going to be Arrieta and they were going to be playing the Cubs. They've had a few days, and it will be exactly a week on Wednesday night for them to formulate a plan and maybe change the way that they have gone about attacking him. But what makes him difficult is his arm angle. He comes across. The baseball players call it crossfire, so it's tougher to square up. And he has four pitches, a four-seam fastball, a cut fastball.
Right.
A curveball and a changeup, and they all come out of the same spot, and they're all pretty tough to differentiate from. So it's going to be an unbelievable challenge, but if Gerrit Cole can hold up his end of the bargain and a pitch well through 5, 6, 7 innings, then, of course, all those other contingencies come into play.
Well, let me ask you this here. Last Monday, they faced Lance Lynn. He had a pitch count, I think, of about 86 through 4 innings, and it forced Matheny to go to the bullpen early. Didn't matter much because of 12 runners left on base, and the Pirates kept on shooting themselves in the foot that night. 2 weeks ago, when they played him on Sunday night at Wrigley, I think Arrieta had what's known as a Maddox, you know, pitching under 100 pitches through 9 innings in a shutout, going through 7 before he was lifted in the 7th inning. Is it a better mentality to try to draw a deeper count against him, or should they go, say, the route of the Blue Jays and first pitch swinging every time they come up?
I would go more the latter than the former TJ. I think that the Pirates might be hesitant to go away from what they try to do, and ever since Jeff Branson took over as hitting coach before last year, they've been a lot more patient. I think, ironically, maybe the 2012-2013 version of the Pirates would have been a better matchup against Arrieta because they were more of what you described the Blue Jays like to do more. It's first pitch swinging, attack that first pitch that you see up over the plate, maybe look for a pitch early in the count and fire away.
Right.
This, the last 2 years, Pirates are more of building up pitch counts, and that could work too. And especially against the Cubs, if this were a five-game series, I would say that would be a great strategy because their bullpen isn't anywhere near as good as the Pirates. But in this one-game scenario, I do wonder if maybe they're bluffing all of us and they're going to come out swinging a little bit early. Since Arrieta has shown the ability, even if he's throwing 110, 120 pitches like he has against the Pirates a couple of times this season, including that last start at PNC Park a few weeks back in that midweek series, he went, I think he threw 120, 130, somewhere in that range, and he's going to go the distance if he's pitching well and the Cubs have even just a one-run lead, I believe. That's what I think Joe Maddon's going to do. So that building up of the pitch count, I'm not sure it quite matters as much in this situation. And there could be a danger in getting away from what you've done best over the previous months and years. But I think in a one-game spot like this, there is a lot more room for a drastic change and a different type of look, maybe at least from some of the guys. If some of the hitters aren't exactly comfortable with that, then I understand. But, you know, for instance, the one hit the Pirates had against Arrieta at Wrigley Field 2 weeks ago was, I believe, a first-pitch swing or maybe a second pitch, Gregory Polanco, and it was a ball outside, in fact, but he knew he could drive it the other way,
right.
And he did, and he slapped it through the infield. So that's one of the things that I'm thinking about. Do the Pirates go away? Do they deviate from their usual game plan? Just because this pitcher is an entirely different animal.
And if you get on base, so they just start running no matter what. I mean, I'm not sure who's going to catch, whether it be David Ross or Miguel Montenegro, but do you just do whatever you can just to generate a run? Because it could be Wednesday, one run wins this game.
I think so. I do, I guess, to hesitate to say everyone should run because there are certain guys that get on base. It might be more of a base clogging situation instead of a base running situation. And I also tend to think that against a really good pitcher, yes, you want to take advantage of all the opportunities you have, but if you run into an out, then that could really shut down the inning, and you may not get another opportunity with a man on base and maybe pop one over the fence with a man on base, and that could really make a difference. So I think it just depends situationally, TJ, on what they do there. If, say, Pedro Alvarez is at the plate, I want Pedro swinging away because he could pop one over the wall and give you a quick two or three runs. Whereas if maybe it's more of a contact guy or someone who doesn't have as much power, but then you put the hit and run on, something like that. You know, a straight steal, depending on what kind of a read you can get off Arrieta. As a righty, you can get a better read than a lefty, usually. And you mentioned the catcher situation. I would bet it's Montero since he caught Arrieta in that Sunday night game.
Oh, interesting.
Like David Ross is more of the John Lester caddy, if you will, in Chicago. So it's going to be Arrieta. I bet they go with Montero, a better offensive player. Really, anyone in baseball is a better offensive player than David Ross.
No kidding.
This year. And Montero can throw it pretty well. So it's not going to be a free-for-all by any means. But, again, that is an opportunity. The Pirates feel like they're a good base-running team despite having run into some outs. The advanced numbers say that they have been a positive base-running team this year, which may not match up to the eye test because we all tend to remember the egregious mistakes on the bases. But the Pirates go first to third very well. They go second to home very well. And those are kind of like hidden value moments,
right,
if you will, in base running. You may have some situations where guys get caught off third or the Pirates trying to press the issue and a player gets thrown out at home and it looks terrible. But the fact is those count just as much as taking that extra base, going from first to home. On a double, like a couple of guys on this roster can do. So with the big outfield at PNC Park, there's an opportunity for that type of thing, too, compared to Wrigley Field.
And, you know, one thing that makes me wonder about this game, and I'll touch on PNC to Wrigley here in a second with the crowd and, you know, what we can potentially expect on Wednesday. Actually, we'll segue from this question I have right now. Does it lend to anything that basically the starting nine for the Cubs, this is their first taste of the postseason compared to the starting nine for the Pirates? This is their third taste of the postseason.
I think some of that matters, but then you can look back to 2013 and, you know, guys like Neil Walker had a big day at the plate. Yes, Marlon Byrd and Russell Martin, it wasn't their first rodeo in the MLB postseason. and they both had home runs against Johnny Cueto. So I'm not going to say that it was all the youngsters that carried the Pirates, at least in that situation. But, you know, Pedro Alvarez had a great postseason in 2013. It just depends on the personality, depends on how you can handle that. I don't believe in players rising to the occasion, but there has been some evidence to say that in high-leverage spots and playoff spots especially, some players shrink a bit from that. And you could even argue that a player like Andrew McCutchen has underperformed in the playoffs. Not a lot of RBIs, no home runs. It's a limited sample size, so that's kind of
right.
It's tricky when you're analyzing this type of stuff, because we know that stats in baseball don't normalize until you get about, you know, 400, 500 at-bats, and that's not going to happen unless you're, say, Bernie Williams or Derek Jeter to have that big of a sample size in the playoffs.
Right.
So, to a large extent, it's projecting and it's guessing, to be honest with you. But when you look at the Cubs, you're right. It is a very youth-driven starting eight, and you have Anthony Rizzo going to be making his playoff debut, Chris Bryant, obviously, as a rookie, Addison Russell. I think Dexter Fowler might have some postseason at-bats, perhaps with the Rockies. I'll have to look into that. But for the most part, the big boys, the guys who carry that Cubs offense, are going to be making their debut. It's going to be a loud environment. I'm not sure exactly how much that affects a baseball player. It doesn't come into play tangibly like football, where a crowd can drown out the calling of the signals and all of that. But it'll be a heightened atmosphere, and they already have the adrenaline going in their first playoff go-around. So it may be too much for some of the guys to handle, and perhaps a guy like Garrett Cole can take advantage of that and throw some more pitches out of the zone and try to get more chases against guys who may be over-eager to produce.
What if everyone in the Lexus Club or Hall of Fame Club, wherever they call the old McClatchy seats now, what if everyone just throws up hand signals whenever Area is looking in towards Montanaro? How about that for being able to screw with a team? Because you're right, you can't drown out a quarterback calling signals for a silent count, but everybody throws up different hand signals. It throws them off. What about that? Let's try to get that going.
I don't really think that's going to do anything.
Oh, come on. Everybody throws up a two, like Section 8 throws up three fingers. Everyone just really confuses them that way. Or maybe just get some thunder sticks, even though I hate them so much. You want to ban the woo, let's just bring some thunder sticks out and use that to clap them together. That'd throw them off, right?
if Jake Arrieta is looking into the stands, he's in trouble anyway. So
right.
He should be locked in on his pitcher.
So, okay, I brought this up a couple weeks ago when I had Bleacher Report's lead MLB writer, Zach Reimer, on, and we're talking about this event, the Pirates-Cubs playoff game. And I said to him that it might help the Pirates more to play this game in Wrigley Field as compared to PNC Park, just because that crowd at Wrigleyville will be so tight, just like the Bartman game, the one bad inning and they're toast. What say you for this PNC Park crowd? Because, from an outsider living in Austin, the crowd the first year against the Reds was electric. It helped when Cueto dropped the ball and Russell Martin hit the home run. It just sent them, on a frenzy. Last year, it didn't seem as excited, maybe because of the Brandon Crawford home run. This year, the temperature I feel as an outsider is that it's a letdown to play in the wild card game again. What say you, the feeling going into this game Wednesday for the hometown crowd?
I think, first of all, 2 years ago was a perfect type of atmosphere for a crowd to take over a game. You had everything go right from the start almost. Liriano comes out throwing darts
right.
And getting swings and misses, and then the back-to-back home runs. I mean, how much better of a start could you imagine there? And really, the Reds never threatened too much. They may have had one or two mini rallies, and they did get a couple of runs across. And they also, Todd Frazier almost hit a pretty big hit down
right.
The left field line, if I recall. It just went foul. But outside of that, there really weren't that many nervous moments, and it was kind of a fortunate circumstance, because I could have seen that crowd getting tight after 20 years of losing first playoff game. Say the Reds take a 2-0 lead, I'm pretty sure they get quiet. And I think that's the case, really, with any sports crowd in a big moment. But yeah, you make a good point about Chicago, and some of the experiences they've had are less than savory in the postseason lately. The Cubs haven't won a postseason game at all since the Bartman game, in fact. They've been swept out of the playoffs twice in the NLDS since that NLCS against the Marlins in 2003. So So it has been a while since something good has happened at Wrigley in the playoffs or in general to the Cubs in the postseason. They get to factor that in for sure. But, you know, I was there for the start against the Jake Arrieta start, I mean, against the Pirates last Sunday night. And one of the better crowds I've ever been a part of, and that's regular season. And in a game, at the time, it didn't feel like it meant too much because the Pirates had such a big lead for home field. Of course, it came down to the final game. But at the time, after the Pirates had taken the first two games of that series, it didn't feel like it meant too much. But still, that crowd was, you know, frothing at the mouth. It was was impressive to see. And I think that town's hungry to cheer on a winner and cheer on a winner in the playoffs. So I think, for the most part, you're just projecting, you're just guessing. And it all comes down to the start. I talked about getting an early lead and how that might affect Joe Maddon's decision-making vis-a-vis Arrieta in the later innings as far as pinch hitter or to keep him in. In terms of crowd noise, crowd energy, I think the early lead is just as important. And the players will tell you on both sides that a loud crowd actually can energize both teams. But I think you and I know that it may give you a little extra boost if they happen to be cheering for you when good things happen to you. As opposed to your opponents. And one maybe X factor that may keep the crowd in, it's supposed to be a warm night on Wednesday.
Oh,
when it gets really cold, when it gets cold and everyone has their gloves on, it's, you know, the applause isn't quite as loud. People don't scream quite as loud. This is going to be a pretty classic early fall evening in Pittsburgh. So I guess conditions will be right for high decibel levels.
Well, good. Because, you know, I remember seeing, you know, your boss's piece on, I guess, what you'd call Crowdgate. You know, no one really showing up for, I mean, people showed up, but not complete sellouts for the Cardinals series and the Reds. You know, for AJ's last game, it looked pretty sparse. The Friday night game, didn't look too many people were there. Because it's cold as balls out there. I don't want to show up. It's why I moved out of Pittsburgh and here to Austin. I hate cold weather. I remember walking across the Clemente Bridge in February to go to work as a ticket sales rep for the Pirates, and I hated it. I didn't want to go there, and they're paying me to be there. So it's good to hear that you know, it's going to be a warm night, so people will want to be out and want to be there. But last question here on this Pirates team before we move on here from there. McCutchen, third year in the playoffs. You touched on it earlier with not too good of numbers, you know, from the Cardinals series, and you know, a small one game from the Giants. Does he need to have a big game, and if they win, a big postseason before he falls into the trap of the Sidney Crosby of you're a great player, maybe a it seems like only a regular season great player, and you can't lead his team to a title. What's wrong with you?
Well, I will remind you about Sidney Crosby. He has led a team to a title. He did pretty well doing it. I know it's 6 years ago.
And that's exactly it. It's a what have you done for me lately, you know, type atmosphere we live in as sports fans. You know, with Steelers, they lose a game to the Ravens, and it's why is this team terrible? Why is Mike Tomlin such a bad coach? It's like he's been to two Super Bowls. Like, he's very good. So now with Crosby, it's what's wrong with them? We haven't been back to a Stanley Cup since 2009. So I'm a little worried. Is McCutchen going to fall into this trap if they lose on Wednesday?
It could be. It could very well be. Even if he has a couple of hits, but it's not, you know, he doesn't hit a double, doesn't hit a home run, doesn't drive in a run. If he has two singles, maybe strikes out with runners on and the Pirates lose, then it's still going to be, you're going to hear the type of narrative you just described. He really needs to have that convergence of having a good personal game and having his team also win a huge one. And of course, Wednesday would qualify as a huge one.
Right.
Most definitely. It could be the biggest game of the postseason because it's funny if you think about it. If the Pirates win this game, it's a possibility they only will face elimination in their first game of the playoffs if things go as planned. So, yeah, it's kind of backwards. It's the way MLB does it right now. And it was just a consequence of playing in a historically difficult division. And the Cubs could say the same thing. They won 97 and they had finished third and play on the road in a winner-take-all scenario. So both sides have gripes, but getting back to McCutchen and in this unique situation, if he does hit a home run, and it doesn't even have to be like a deciding home run, but if he drives in a couple, if he pops one over the fence, you know, all of a sudden, a lot of what you described, that type of negative feeling toward his performance in the clutch suddenly goes away. So I think we even saw that with A-Rod in the 09 playoffs with the Yankees. Although some of that still lingers because of personality you know, problems people have with him, and of course the PEDs. But I think we saw how quickly that that choker tag, so to speak, which I won't use but some do, can go away with just one great performance. And you can look back and say Peyton Manning had a similar situation as well. He won a Super Bowl, so that's always going to be able to, I guess, hedge against some of the people who say he wasn't quite as good in the playoffs. And really, he wasn't. But I think it's difficult for McCutcheon. He doesn't have Jung Ho Gung behind him in the lineup anymore. This whole month of September and into October, I guess, this past weekend, he hasn't seen much to hit. And I think I was just watching him swing yesterday in that Sunday game, and he still looks a bit out of sync, and maybe like he hasn't seen enough reps. He hasn't seen enough hittable pitches, and it was crazy over that road trip that the Pirates won 8 out of 10. I think McCutcheon was walked 16, 17 times. Yeah. It got farcical at a certain point, and teams just weren't pitching to him. And I don't think it's any coincidence that much of that has happened since Gung went out of the lineup and went out for the season. No offense to any of the guys sitting behind McCutcheon, but Gung was their second-best hitter behind Cush. If you look at WAR, if you look at OPS, any of those other types of advanced measures, or even some of the traditional ones. So things have changed, and especially in the playoffs, teams are going to try their darndest to not let the star beat them. And for the Pirates, their star is McCutcheon.
You know, it's funny you bring up Jung Ho. I saw the local radio host in Pittsburgh, Mark Madden, tweet out that if Jung Ho was healthy, he was on lock to play on Wednesday. That's just silly to think, right?
What did he say? I'm sorry.
It was in response to I think it's a social media move to get him to throw out the first pitch on Wednesday. And one of his final thoughts on the matter was it wasn't even a lock that he was going to play on Wednesday to begin with if he was healthy. That's just silly to think, correct?
I can't believe he said that because Jung Ho, of course, was, like I just said, one of their more valuable players. And there was some controversy over playing Jordy Mercer at short all the time and perhaps giving Jung Ho a couple of days off here or there to accommodate for him transitioning to a longer MLB schedule. But if you look at the raw numbers, and I did for DKPittsburghSports.com a couple of weeks ago. In fact, I wrote it the day that he got hurt. So
good. Good job, Barmas.
It felt a little bit moot a couple of hours after I posted it. But at the same time, he was playing just as much as anybody in the Pirates lineup, including Jordy Mercer, even when you factor in the idea that he's really your only legitimate everyday shortstop. Apologies to Gung, but I think he's a lot better suited for third base.
Right.
But Gung was playing as much as anybody, so he was going to be in that lineup on Wednesday.
Yeah, go search the timeline. It was, you know, yesterday, right after they won and clinched home field, and they were talking about who's going to throw out the first pitch, which I agree. Someone from the 79 World Series, like Tecovy, who just came back from heart surgery, I think, before the season started. You know, it'd be nice for him to throw out the first pitch, but yeah, I had to laugh at him potentially, you know, saying that he wouldn't even be starting on Wednesday's lineup, which was odd. Like, I can see if you say Ramirez not starting for Harrison, or put Ramirez at first and not, you know, Pedro. But yeah, that was a little odd from that standpoint. Okay, you got to go because you got to do a numbers piece for, I'm assuming, on this upcoming game. But with the last 5 minutes here, Penguin season starts up, I think, this week or next week in Dallas. I would be going, so I live in Austin, but I have a seven-month-old by the name of Kennedy that I like to spend time with. And the whole, you know, saying to your wife, oh, by the way, deuces, I'm going to go watch hockey in Dallas. I'll be back tomorrow. It's not best for business. Not a good way to keep the home front happy. So, Penguins team. Toughest division in hockey, the Metropolitan, or what?
I think they're in, you know, this is redundant, talking about the Pirates in a tough division. I think the Penguins are in a really difficult division here. With teams like the Blue Jackets, I think should be much better. Really, it was all injuries that held them back last year, and they came on late once again. And you have even teams like the Flyers, that even though they may finish out of the playoffs like they did last year, they're always going to be geared up to play the Penguins, and they give their best effort in those spots. And then, of course, you have the Rangers, who've been to a cup final recently. I'm interested to see what the Devils do. They'll be kind of an intriguing one. But the Islanders are this could be their best team in 20-some-odd years, maybe even 30 years, I believe. And, you know, we'll see how they take to Brooklyn and all that. But I think on the ice, they're positioned to make a run. We saw how tough the Capitals were last season. They seemed to have all their bases covered for the most part. It's going to be a really, really tough challenge to make the playoffs for most teams. But I do think at the same time, the Penguins have upgraded their game. They've gotten a lot better from a possession standpoint with their addition to Bonino and Eric Fair. And Phil Kessel, what more can you say? What a job by the Pens and Jim Rutherford to position themselves to pick him up for really minimal cost when you look at it. And I think he's in a position where he can maximize his goal-scoring ability alongside Sidney Crosby. So, again, it depends on injuries. It depends on how fast some of the younger D develop. Eric Bouillot's going to start the year in the AHL, it looks like. So he's not progressing as quickly as we all thought. It's a matter of Marc-Andre Fleury continuing his mid-career run of good form. I think he's playing as well as he ever has. You know, Lamada step back into the fray quickly and get back into the swing of things. Same deal with Chris Letang. I know he looked great in the preseason, but he went through quite a bit over the last 2 years. So that's something to watch as well. So there are some variables, but about the two superstar centers, you have Phil Kessel, one of the more consistent scorers in the NHL in the last decade. And suddenly, guys like Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis might be able to play more complementary roles. We'll see if Kunitz sticks with that first line or what happens. But you have players like David Perron waiting in the wings. Bo Bennett had a better preseason. So I'm high on the Pens. It's just I don't know if it'll be enough to win the Metropolitan Division. But as we know in hockey, that type of thing doesn't really matter. Just get in the playoffs and try to peak late.
It's funny, you say Perron and also Hornquist. I completely forgot they're even on the team. I just, you know, hearing Kessel and the return of Dupuis and, you know, everybody else, I'm like, oh yeah, we still have a second line that would be probably 30 other teams' first line coming out there with Malkin, Perron, and Hornquist. But let me ask you this here. I know basketball is a foreign concept to Pittsburghers, but the Golden State Warriors just won the NBA championship, so people know who they are and what they're all about. Does this Penguins team remind you of the Golden State Warriors?
I can see that. They're going to push the pace.
Yeah, for sure. All offense.
Right. Mike Johnson wants to have four scoring lines, and it's rare that a team has that much depth, but it's becoming more common in the NHL. You see teams, you could look at the Tampa Bay Lightning last year or even the Chicago Blackhawks. Maybe the Blackhawks have a little bit more of the classic gritty type bottom sixers, but the Lightning last year ran out, you know, 12 guys who can put the puck in the net up front for you, and it seemed to work out pretty well for them. So I'm excited. I think it's a newer approach to hockey, and when you think about it, why do you need a quote-unquote energy line? It's really, I think, a case of teams justifying the fact they don't have 12 guys who can help you put in the puck in the net, so they're going to go in a different direction. But I think the Penguins, despite their continuing lack of ability to draft and develop forwards, at the same time, they've been able to finagle some things. And, yeah, we'll see about Bo Bennett as well. But they've been able to make some trades and free agent signings to make this, I think, a really formidable forward unit.
And I really think that if it's tied up with about 3 minutes left in the third period, just say bleep it. Go to overtime. Just go to 3-on-3 and just let them dominate. Why not play? Why not have the focus of every game get to overtime?
That's going to be fun, isn't it? I'm really looking forward to that, watching all this.
Right. It's going to be like the old arcade game. I can't remember. It was a 3-on-3. It was like NBA Jam for hockey. Open Ice. That's what it was called. Where it was just 3-on-3, and it was back whenever it was Lemieux, Yager, and it was like the mid-90s Penguins that you play with Zuboff.
Sergei Zuboff.
Yeah, and just wreck teams because you just had all the offense from there. And, you know, last question here, the Penguins. When people complain about the Scuderis, and I guess not Craig Adams anymore, but the people that you look at them, you're like, they're not as good as what you would, you know, someone in the minor league like a Pouliot. Don't you kind of just trust the front office that they know more than the average person watching at home and complaining on Twitter knows?
I think fans are always going to complain. It's just going to be the nature of the beast, at least some of them. I never presumed that I knew more than the front office. I was always taking a wait-and-see approach, and maybe that's why I fit naturally as a reporter for my profession because I'm more at home analyzing and looking at the moves, not exactly trying to second guess or even first guess what they're going to do. But it does look like with the addition of Sam Ventura, Carnegie Mellon University statistics adjunct professor who helped create the website waronice.com,
right,
which is great. I think his addition indicates that they're looking at a more forward-thinking standpoint for their hockey operations moves and what they're trying to do. Jason Karmanos is in charge of that analytics department, if you will, a guy that Jim Rutherford brought in from the Carolina Hurricanes from his tenure down there. And they've definitely added the brain power, I think, to the, I don't want to insult the older hockey type evaluators, but there's a need for a good mix. You need to have scouting and you need to have advanced analytics as part of your repertoire, I think, in today's NHL to get the most out of what you have. And it's not that the Penguins are lacking for revenue or lacking for funds, but it's a salary cap league. And so
yeah,
you really have to scratch and claw, kind of like the Pirates do with their own self-imposed salary cap, if you will. But you have to look for those small edges because in professional sports these days, the small edges can make all the difference. There really isn't that big of a gap even between the best and the worst teams. So any opportunity you have to get an edge, I think you need to take advantage of it.
I mean, you look at the Pirates and J-Hop. Oh, no, sorry, J-A. As someone with initials, I refuse to call him J when he spells his name. J space A space Hop. He was looked at as a trash heap, and why did they go after him and not David Price, which David Price is, you know, awesome. But I think if you look at the numbers, probably Hop and Price are probably neck and neck from the trade deadline of great pieces. So that right there is someone that they knew more than what we knew. So we crushed them whenever they made the trade for Hop and not someone that was a name. And he's probably going to be the third starter if they make it to the divisional round. From there. So last question here, I'll let you go on this one. You roll your eyes more at which one of these? People taking selfies while they're at baseball or hockey or football games, which I just want to shoot those people into the sun, or the people that see your work with doing the analytics and looking into why stuff's happening because of numbers, and they say, "Bah, don't care. Play the game. Watch the game on TV. Watch the film. I don't care."
I would say the second one bothers me, even though the first can definitely get my dander up as well. But the second part, the watch the game, folks, I am watching the game. I'm right. Also trying to dig deeper and figure out which trends are meaningful and what really makes a difference. So it all comes down to intellectual curiosity, I think. Are you just content with watching the players run around and do their thing? You know, that's fine. But my way of watching has always been a little bit more, or it's been a lot more than a lot more involved, a lot more, I guess, mentally rigorous than some others. But that's just my personality. So you can watch the game your way, and I won't put that down. And I can watch the game my way and try to analyze that. But I do think that you are adding value. And I think you're being negligent, in fact, if you're not looking into the advanced numbers these days, because they're out there. And if you're a journalist, you have a responsibility to present the information that is available and what you can dig up. And if you're not looking into some of the other stuff that's out there in terms of the sabermetrics or the statistics, I think you're doing your readers a disservice.
And you're going to be putting your head through the press box wall whenever you probably see your timeline pop up. If Pedro, say he goes 2-for-3 with a home run that puts him ahead and McCutchen goes 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts, trade McCutchen, sign Pedro. He's better than McCutchen. And if, God forbid, Melanson blows a save, bah, he's not good. Terrible guy. Why do we even have him on our team?
The Melanson thing, I was just talking about this in the press box yesterday. If you're going to complain about some closer or some setup man, look away from Mark Melanson and Tony Watson because they are absolutely the best at what they do, especially this year.
Right. And I remember I said to a buddy of mine, we should trade for Papelbon back in April when Melanson was having his little struggling, and I'm glad that did not happen.
It was weird. His velocity was down. He acted like it was, you know, unreasonable to worry about it. I was worried. I think he was probably worried, but the velocity came back and sort of the sharpness on that cutter, and And you know what? He leaned on that curveball early on, and now the curveball is really playing up for him. So it might have been a blessing in disguise.
There we go. All right, Matt, I'll cut you loose here. Go back to work on your numbers piece. That's going to be a lot smarter than I could ever think of doing. Your work is great. The whole site with DK does phenomenal stuff over there. So if you haven't subscribed to his website, I suggest doing so. I remember my parents were here from Pittsburgh, and I looked at my dad's iPad, and sure enough, the DK app was front and center on the iPad. I'm not making that up as some shameless plug. It was really there, and I went, hey, I know those people who do that. So if you see him, your boss, tell him he does some great work, and he still has a very open invitation to be on this podcast. I tried to get him. We worked with the Trib, and we can never get together, so he still has an open invite to come on the show and have 30 minutes of silliness with me.
Well, I'll let him know, and thank you so much for the promotion there. We appreciate that, and yeah, thank your parents for buying in and signing up, being part of the lunatic fringe, we like to call them, the DK Pittsburgh Sports subscribers. We're happy to have them, and it's been a fun ride. Thanks, DJ.
All right, that's this week's episode with Matt. Like I said in the beginning when I gave them their plug, DK on Sports, go ahead and follow them on the Twitter and the Facebook and whatever else. I sound very old with my generalization of the Twitter and the Facebook and the whatever. Anyway, that's this week's episode, as I said, with Matt. Not much else is to be said except for I hope the Pirates win. As much as the chagrin of my wife and her sister and them being Cubs fan and we all live together and the kid has a onesie for a Cubs and also a Pirates one, so we'll see which one she's wearing at the end of Wednesday's game. All right, for the TJ Macklin show, I am as always TJ Macklin. Be sure to follow on Twitter at TJ Macklin, Place to Be Nation as well, and everywhere else where you can find all of the other podcasts here at the site. So we will catch you next week.